The Fan on Demand.
Make it four straight losses for the Blue Jays.
Strike two pitch, swing and a miss, strike three. The game is over. Baltimore sweeps the series. They win this one 6-1.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
7:02, good morning, Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Toronto Blue Jays get swept in Baltimore. We were talking about the grounds for kicking people out of ballgames if they swear. Just want to read a couple texts. This one comes in, says, I Wikipedia the guys and get personal, but I keep the swearing out of there. The security bother me, but have no grounds to kick me out. A little wife talk never hurt anyone. I will admit, I like that. I like that stuff.
Like if Justin Verlander's on the hill, you're ripping him about Kate Upton.
Obviously,
and his white bum.
You know, telling someone that, hey, tell Julie the treadmill's not for hanging clothes off of. It's not a clothes hanger. It's a treadmill. Stuff like that's funny. It's funny. Heckling is good.
Heckling is good.
Swearing is, and obviously there's certain words. It's the same talking umpire. There's certain words, I guess, that should get you at least a warning and then tossed. Because we've always sat beside those guys.
Like the words Marcus Stroman was firing into the Orioles dugout that made Buck Showalter suddenly have a twitch in his hand. Like, get off the field. Go into your dugout. The Orioles sweep the Jays. Jays move on, play the Yankees tonight. It's all over but the crying. I guess second place, that silver medal in the AL East, is still to be determined. Jays have only finished second one time since 1993, and that was rather recently, if you count 8 years as recent, in 2006. We were talking about Marcus Stroman. Well, we've talked about him the last two mornings. Maybe we didn't expect a suspension. Maybe we didn't at the end of the day. Did it surprise you when you heard, Andrew, six games, he's going to miss a start. Now he's appealing the suspension, but the hearing is going to be before his next start, and I would assume he loses the appeal and doesn't get to start at Yankee Stadium on Sunday.
It did surprise me because it's different than, you know, you watch a hockey game and you see, oh, you know, boy, there's a headshot for Matt Cook. Let's all sit and wait by the television and the radio to find out how many games the suspension is. I didn't really think twice about the Marcus Stroman thing, who suspended six games yesterday. Because, well, how about this? Marcus Stroman, at the end of the day, did not hit Caleb Joseph. Darren O'Day did hit Jose Bautista, but Stroman's getting suspended. That's how serious they take, you know, when you buzz a guy around the head.
And I would say there's been other cases where this year, and I can't remember the pitcher that did it, Paul Goldschmidt got hit by a Pittsburgh Pirates pitcher in the Pirates Diamondbacks series. The very next night, late in the game, I think it was the eighth inning in a blowout game, Andrew McCutchen takes that one right in the back from a Diamondbacks middle reliever and then ends up missing 4 weeks. The Goldschmidt thing looked like an accident. The McCutchen thing clearly was on purpose. And then we're all up in arms going, it could have cost McCutchen his season. Where's the accountability for the manager here in a case like this? And then this is why Jose Bautista got involved and talked about Ryan Dempster, who was on MLB Network. And Jose Bautista says, this is a bit of a pot, kettle, black thing going on here when Ryan Dempster talks about not hitting guys on purpose when he drilled A-Rod. Remember, he threw about three times in a row at A-Rod in a Sunday night game in one of his first games back. And the obvious intent was a message. It was almost like, we don't support your cheating more than anything. And we're going to pump you in the ribs here. I do want baseball to do more. Stroman's, put it this way, Andrew, I think Stroman's a bit of an innocent bystander in that the rules need to be changed, but I want to see, I don't know, it can't start with Marcus Stroman, but I do think it's a bit of an archaic act. You hit our guy, we're going to hit yours. And this happens more in the American League because pitchers can't step up to the plate and take one for themselves. That's a bit of a problem. I love the DH. I'm a DH guy. Grew up in DH cities. Lived in DH cities. But that's the one big drawback with it is you don't have to face accountability for yourself if you're Marcus Stroman next time you play them.
Yeah, and I'll always be a little more old school. I still like the fighting in hockey. I'm on that side. I wouldn't say I like it. I don't necessarily like bench clearing brawls in baseball, but I respect teammates and accountability and payback and revenge. I'm more of an old school guy, though. I had no problem with what Marcus Stroman did. I just think, yeah, probably keep it around the belt.
And
just like I Listen, I don't like Darren O'Day. I don't like Darren O'Day. I don't like that he's always been on Jose Bautista's case.
Sure,
and Bautista
sure.
usually takes some yard. But what he did was fine, and Major League Baseball ruled the same thing.
But the issue is the intent, and if Stroman's all over the map here. It's an accident, and I wasn't doing it on purpose, but I'm going to reach out to Caleb Joseph and tell him that it was an accident. Well, he's had opportunity to do that, and I don't think he did it. We'd know about it if that conversation had happened. Don't say you're going to do it. Don't say you're going to do it and pull it off. I want them to go back in and look at this in the off season and say, you know, enough's enough. It's sort of like sticks. You made a good analogy with the fighting, and I'm fine with fighting too. But the stick swinging in the NHL, we don't have stick swinging problems anymore because they made the penalties so severe. You wouldn't have guys buzzing each other. I don't think the Giancarlo Stanton thing was on purpose. That might have been a pitch that got away from the Brewers pitcher Fears. But he's going to remember that the rest of his life, that he could have killed the guy. He could have killed Giancarlo Stanton throwing at him like that.
But also in hockey, a high stick, inadvertent or not, is a double minor. If you're drawing blood, you know, 2 minutes if you don't, it's always a penalty, right? You could be lifting someone's stick defensively and smoke someone in the chin. You're getting a penalty.
I know, and I don't know how you penalize guys. I just wonder if we'll have fewer and fewer old school managers like Buck Showalter, Kirk Gibson, who just have this idea you have to have this retributive justice. A lot of people, Jeff Blair knows baseball as well as anybody I know that I work with in this industry, and he didn't think anything was going to happen the next night. Showalter kind of surprised a lot of people that Bautista was hit. And then what? Didn't both benches got warned last night as well?
Again, yeah.
For inside pitches.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where it's always as intentional as something looks or doesn't look. It's impossible, beyond a benefit of the doubt, to pinpoint it. Because I think we'd all agree that over the course of the last week, Stroman on purpose, Loop not on purpose, Darren O'Day on purpose, and Aaron Sanchez last night not on purpose.
Definitely not last night on purpose.
Right?
Yeah.
But how do you prove one way or the other?
Yeah.
You just can't. 7:09, it's Brady and Walker. Let's get you to your Thursday morning six pack.
This is your Thursday morning six pack. Six things you need to start your day.
Don't forget, we have baseball tickets to give to you coming up in 5 minutes from now, so don't go anywhere. Number six, Greg, Rob Ford in the news yesterday, and this time for not crazy hijinks reasons. Rob Ford is now in a different kind of fight.
Yeah, we knew when he withdrew from the race last week that it would pull the mayoral election in a different direction, but it has now, with Mayor Ford being diagnosed with liposarcoma. He has an abdominal tumor. It's rare but treatable, but again, everyone's used the catchphrase, he's in for the fight of his life. We've seen very little publicly from Doug Ford, his brother, but he's going to start campaigning to attempt to be mayor. I would think it's an incredible long shot, and we'll see how emotionally invested Doug Ford is in running for mayor. Maybe more a gesture than anything else, but no one thinks it's going to be successful.
Number five, some NHL injury news when it comes to the Minnesota Wild. So Josh Harding was a really good story last year. Of course, he battles MS, but had a terrific season in between the pipes for the Wild. Out indefinitely with a broken right foot in an off-ice incident. What that was, who knows. But the Wild, who still have yet to sign Darcy Kemper, he's without a deal, have invited Ilya Bryzgalov to training camp on an invite. Don't forget, he finished the season there, and very much looks like he could be in the running again this year.
I'd say they've been trying to consistently, would you say, replace Nick Backstrom, and yet they've extended Nick Backstrom a couple times there. They know he's all right, but I think they know that now that they've got players like Parise and Suter, that they want to go next level, and Backstrom's not the guy to take them necessarily there, and his health has been an issue at times during his career.
Number four, latest black guy for the NFL, another running back. I don't know if it's just coincidence or not. Jonathan Dwyer of the Arizona Cardinals, the former Pittsburgh Steeler, the latest to be banned from team activities because of a domestic assault charge.
Yeah, here's the tough thing as well. I mean, beyond the obvious, it sounds horrible. There's an 18-month-old child involved. There's a fracture that was caused in this injury. Dwyer's denying that any physical assaults took place, according to Arizona police. And the wife and the woman, and the child have moved. So they're not together anymore, I suppose, in a romantic sense. But this happened in July. And Dwyer tried to keep this a secret. The Cardinals say they didn't know, but There's a lot of people in Arizona questioning whether they did indeed know, and we're hoping it could be sort of swept under the carpet.
NFL Thursday Nighter, by the way, is Tampa on the road in Atlanta tonight. Number three, the LA Angels clinched the AL West. They lost Tyler Skaggs. They lost Garrett Richards. Still have 95 wins under the best team in baseball.
It's pretty incredible run to catch Oakland, and we even thought it'd be maybe the Angels and Oakland down the stretch, and would they beat each other up and Seattle be a factor? The Angels are going to win the... Now, I don't know if anyone's going to win a division by as much as Baltimore. Baltimore's 14 and a half games up on the Blue Jays and Yankees. That's approaching a record American League East margin between first and second. But for the Angels to just run with this, they're 51 and 26 at home, best run differential in the sport. I'm fascinated by it because we saw Garrett Richards injury and we thought that's bad news, not obviously for him, but obviously for the team as well. Are they going to be able to hold it together? And they've won an incredible amount of games since his injury.
And I know we both did say, so late last season, both the Blue Jays and the Angels were in, you know, this type of death march to round out the season. We went to the series last year and both said the same thing. There's no way that this team in the Angels doesn't find a way to bounce back next year. Like, look at this lineup. And this could, they lost Trumbo as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. They've had injuries here and there. And we know Albert Pujols not at full health. Mike Trout has probably had the worst of his three seasons. And he's probably going to walk away with the MVP, his first this year.
Number two, Jays get swept in Baltimore 6-1. Reached the final last night. Two more home runs for Steve Pierce of the Orioles. Jays are on the road at Yankee Stadium tonight. It's R.A. Dickey, who's actually been really, really good for the last little bit, takes on Shane Green. First pitch, 7:07. Coverage begins at 7 on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Also, it's on Sportsnet 1 tonight. The number one thing you need to know, Leafs camp, it's here. Begins today. Fitness testing. 64-man camp roster was unveiled yesterday. First on-ice session goes tomorrow. Give me one storyline that you will be following.
Do you have Stefan Della Rivera fever?
I do not.
Okay. I was going to ask you to see
can Brandon Cozen crack the line?
I was going to ask you to see a medical practitioner if you have Stefan Della Rivera fever. But that's an odd invite. He was a big name with the World Juniors, right?
Well, we'll all be watching Nylander. And yes, things can get overblown with your first round pick. And can he make the team? And oh my God, he scored in the preseason. But hey, it's okay to be excited. It's okay to watch this kid and see how he handles things, because that second line winger spot, it's open. There's nobody there.
You saw a lot of Marlies last year. I get that the Marlies, even though they're here, it's sort of like the Buffalo Bison. Sometimes for the Jays, sometimes can be out of sight, out of mind. But you saw a lot more offensive talent by the end of last season working for the Marlies than you did the season before, put it that way. There's a lot more guys that could contribute. We just don't know the roles yet.
Yeah, and you know what? Peter Holland is that guy, too. One-way deal. Got to grab a spot. And we'll see. It begins today. On ice begins tomorrow. We want to send you to the Rogers Center coming up September the 23rd. It's Toronto. It's the Seattle Mariners. Sportsnet 590 The Fans and Brady Walker's ticket window opens up courtesy of the Great Blue Heron Casino. Here is our question this morning. Which player has played in the most games in Toronto's history? Give us a call, 416-870-0590, star 590 on your cell phone. High 15 degrees, mix of sun and cloud today.
Coming up, Nick Kiprios at 722, Sportsnet analyst. We're 20 days away from puck drop. We'll talk that. And I didn't like at all what John Davidson did yesterday to his player, his pride and joy, Ryan Johansson. Did Nick think it was above board? We'll ask him in 7 minutes.
Back of Seattle, dead even with the Yankees. The Anaheim Angels, they're going to the playoffs as they clinch the AL West with a 5-0 win over the Mariners. Angels have 95 wins and own the best record in baseball. Toronto Maple Leafs camp arrives today. With fitness testing, the first on-ice session set to go tomorrow. Negotiations not going very well between the Columbus Blue Jackets and young 30-goal man Ryan Johansson. Jackets president John Davidson was on Primetime Sports last night.
If he comes in here and decides to go with the bridge at the right number, he may hit the lottery. He has two more years at 30 goals. Boy, oh boy, they're going to sit in a good position. And you know what? We should pay him.
More bad news for the NFL. Arizona Cardinals running back Jonathan Dwyer, the latest to be arrested on domestic violence charges. The NFL Thursday Nighter. It's on Sportsnet Ontario. Atlanta's home to Tampa. The Bucs looking to avoid dropping to 0-3. Falcons are 1-1. You're listening to the home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Jeff Blair Show. This morning at 9. The This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
7:23, welcome back. I'm Andrew Walker. He's Greg Brady. It is Brady and Walker. Congratulations to Dave and Keswick.
You are so clever.
Greg and Keswick, sorry.
Okay, you are Dave. So clever.
Sorry, Dave. He knew the answer Thanks, to Greg. Our question, which player has played the most games in Toronto's history? That is Tony Fernandes, who had 11 stints with the Blue Jays.
Yeah, it helps.
1,450 games. Brady Walker's ticket window opens up every morning at 7:14, courtesy of the Great Blue Heron Casino.
Who do you think of Tony Fernandes more of, as a Cleveland Indian or a Toronto?
A New York Yankee.
That's what I thought. Yeah. So we'll talk to Randall Hannibal about tonight's NFL game. It is on Sportsnet. Tampa in Atlanta at the George Dome. That's coming up in about 20 minutes.
Also, our NHL two-a-days here on Brady and Walker continues today. We pinpoint to the Calgary Flames and the Carolina Hurricanes.
Harder work for us than the fitness test will be for some Maple Leafs and not others. No fitness test around here, thank heavens. Although we do have Doug McClain's constantly hooked up to an EKG. We just don't want it's a blood pressure issue, really. Nick Kiprios, analyst for NHL and Sportsnet, got kind enough to join us. Did you hate fitness testing day back in the day? Hated it. You're a marathoner now, though. You could do it now, but maybe better than 1993.
Other than the New York Marathon, that's the last time I ran 2 miles. It was in Philadelphia's training camp in the early 80s. But it was stressful for the guys. They just wanted it over with.
I think I saw that, like, the thing last year, we mentioned it on air, was when Tortorella, during that brief stay in Vancouver, he wanted players running 2 miles at under 6 minutes a mile, and only the Sedins could do it. So then they had to run, like, 5 miles in under 32. It just goes on and on and on, but it was only the Twins that could pull it off.
Oh, and then you got goalie screaming, listen, I just got to stop the puck. I don't have to beat it up as they're doing bench pressing.
Yeah, the goalie, you can make a calendar. You know, they have those fireman calendars. You can make a calendar of bad goalie bodies that I've seen in NHL dressing rooms. It's
we'll put
just
Glenn
amazing.
Healy on the cover.
Yeah, Manny Legacy's Mr. March. Anyway, I see now I'm going to get sued or something. Yeah. What was your read on Dave Festrick wrote about this this conference that Steve Spott went to? Is there a thing there? Is it possible Steve Spott should have been more guarded with comments, or is it a much ado about nothing?
Yes, absolutely. There's a lesson to be learned for Steve Spott on this. And, you know, at the end of the day, we can say whatever we want about Festcheck, the article, the minor coaches, whatever. You can say whatever you want, but the lesson that has to be learned is from Steve Spott on what you can say and what you really can't say in this town. Like, you can get away with it in a lot of places. In Toronto, this sort of stuff happens all the time. I didn't like the article, to be quite honest with you, and I read Dave Festcheck, and, you know, I got a lot of time for him, but this particular one, I didn't like. I didn't like, first of all,
is it the anonymity of the coaches, or is it
all of it?
Yeah.
All of it. The headline, he balks at a breakout plan. Like, I've been into enough dressing rooms where we've had healthy dialogue. You think Phil might be the only guy that could question a breakout on what, you know, you like and what you don't like? That happens all the time. You challenge each other on, you know, decisions. But when it's all said and done, you're going to do what the coaching staff wants to do. You may give them feedback on what your strengths and weaknesses might be on a breakout and what you like and what you don't like. But then when it's all said and done, you do what the coaches say. And Phil, we can say a lot of things about Phil, but he's never come across in his career so far that he's a screw you, I'll do what I want kind of guy. So I don't think there's any rift between Steve Spott, Phil Kessel, and the coaching staff, okay? And when you get deeper into this article, you know, I found it very TMZ off of these minor coaches. I got the biggest kick out of hearing that they don't want their names in this article out of fear for the Toronto Maple Leafs and how much sway they have in this city. Like Carlton the Bear is going to show up at their minor Adam practice
with a hammer
and take their whistle away, right? Because they're so powerful that we're going to hide now behind our comments on what Steve Spott said at a coaching clinic. So they say in this article that they love the fact that he's candid and honest. Well, that's great, but all these minor coaches did was ruin it for the rest of the minor coaches that ever go to an NHL hockey clinic ever again out of fear that they're going to get ratted out on what they say. And Nick, to me, it's just like, I don't know, shame on the minor hockey coaches who went out there and talked to the media when a guy was just trying to help you deal with your players and some of the challenges that might come with it.
Couldn't agree more.
I found the whole thing a joke.
Nick Kypreos, our guest at NHL on Sportsnet. We are 20 days away from the drop of the puck. So there's a report yesterday that Bobby Ryan has been offered a 7-year deal to the tune of $49 million with the Ottawa Senators and turned it down. If you're turning down that, you got to put two and two together and think you ain't signing anything.
Well, I don't necessarily say that that might it is the case throughout the whole season here. And, you know, let's face it, these star players have you know, control once they get into that, you know, 18 months, 24 month period of looking at unrestricted free agency. We just saw the whole thing play out with PK Subban, and PK had to work a little harder to get his money. And it's just the opposite with Bobby Ryan. I mean, they're starting at $7 million over 7 years, but I don't think that this is about money. This is certainly a situation where I think Bobby wants to feel this thing out, wants to see where it's headed, wants to see maybe what the team looks like, wants to see maybe, you know, his relationship, you know, with the head coach, Paul McLean, I hear, isn't the rosiest either. There's some nights he thought he should play more. There's some nights when he felt he wasn't used well enough. A lot of things come into play here on why he's not necessarily signing on the dotted line here. So how he feels today and how he'll feel in November, December, or even at the end of the year might be a little different. But for now, he's in a holding pattern, and he just wants to probably see what lies ahead for him in the Ottawa organization in the next few months, if not the whole season.
Nick Kypreos, our guest on Brady and Walker. We have about 90 seconds, but I want to give you a lot of time on Ryan Johansson. Only because I heard John Davidson on with Bob yesterday in the afternoon, and I thought there's a couple things I think Davidson's doing wrong here.
Yeah.
What's your read? Everybody criticized Bergevin. Everybody criticized Subban. And as it turned out, they got the player they wanted. The player got the deal he wanted.
Yeah.
Isn't that the better way to do that?
Well, the mistake that John Davidson made was he's made this personal. And that's rule number one, that you don't do that. And it's business, and, you know, you take the high road. But when you start having personal attacks on it, it does nothing to help you bridge anything towards a settlement. And even if you have a settlement, there will still be animosity based on stuff that you said that can't be forgotten with a, I'm sorry. So, you know, John's got to take the high road from here on in and keep it out of the media. In saying that, this is a game of who blinks first. And Ryan Johansson isn't going down the same path as others do with a bridge contract. He thinks he had such a great year, and he's such an important piece to what is a vulnerable market right now, is he's going to try to take full advantage of that. And you know what? That's business. Sorry, but if he can get $7 or $8 million and avoid the bridge contract, that's what he's going to try to do. Now, we'll see where John Davidson goes here and whether or not Columbus blinks. And, you know, he could sit out the whole year as they're suggesting. But let's see how you feel if you go 2-5 or 2-7 to start the season and you're under the gun to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, so, and if he has a slow start.
It's a game of chicken here.
Yeah.
And we'll see who blinks first.
Yeah, it's where we were with Kadri and the Leafs last year. It's just bigger numbers. Nick, we got a blast. Thanks so much for this.
Good to be back, boys.
Yeah, it is. Nick Kypreos, analyst, NHL Sports. We got no time to do this here, but I want to talk about the Johansson thing after we have Randall to handle on 740. So
yeah,
let's do that.
We're less than 3 weeks away from the drop of the puck. Let's continue our tour around the National Hockey League. How about those Calgary Flames?
Oh, man.
Brady and Walker's Two-A-Days, getting you set for the 2014-2015 season. What happened?
This is what happened last year. The Flames impressed everybody last season with their heart and their hustle and their grind-it-out chutzpah. And congratulations, you finished 26th. Hooray. 35-40-7. They ended up picking fourth overall, highest in team history. They drafted Sam Bennett out of Kingston.
The offseason.
Pretty busy offseason for the Flames. Brad Treelivings, the new GM. Bad goaltender Jonas Hiller on a two-year deal from Anaheim. Former Leaf Mason Raymond goes back home, 3 years, $9 million. Devin Setoguchi signs there. They also gave about $100 gajillion to defenseman Derek Englund.
What do we think?
All right, what do we think? Listen, the Flames were a really nice story last season. Kind of. I mean, for a rebuild, Greg, it was nice and fuzzy and butterfly feelings. But is this a team that wants to win three or four more games? Or kind of bottom out further for Connor McDavid?
Not sure there's a step to make. In fact, Buffalo, who we previewed yesterday, probably made more additions to make them better and can win more games in the East than Calgary can win in the West. I'm not sure there's a team more primed to be bottom three than Calgary. And, you know, you and I joked about it all last year. I didn't think Calgary was going to be last or second last year. They were close, but I don't see enough here. I don't see enough offense, and I question the Jonas Hiller thing as well. He should give them more stable goaltending than they've had probably since Kiprusoff was 5-6 years ago, but it's got to prove it first.
Yeah, and listen, everything did go right in a lot of aspects for this team last year, but you wonder if the offense is going to be there. Don't forget, they lost Mike Camilleri and Lee Stempniak, two of their better wingers. Mike Camilleri is now with the New Jersey Devils. Our NHL Two-A-Days continue at 8:30. So we'll take a look at the Carolina Hurricanes. Chance of showers this morning, mix of sun and cloud, high of 15 degrees. Don't forget, Randall the Handle joining us in about 7 minutes. We'll tell you what you need to know about week three in the NFL and tonight's Thursday Nighter.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Brady and Walker continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
7:42. Good morning. It's Brady and Walker. Andrew Walker, Greg Brady on your Thursday. Sportsnet has the Thursday nighter tonight. It's at Tampa Bay. They are 0-2 on the road, taking on 1-1 Atlanta. And as we sit here today, the Falcons are a touchdown favorite at home.
12% since they added the extra wild card in 1990, the season. They went to 12 teams from 10. 12% of 0-2 teams make the playoffs.
Oh, God, at 0-3, that
I haven't done the research.
Right,
I'm going to bet it's less than 12%.
I'm going to bet it's more.
Yeah?
Yeah, no.
Now, sometimes it's nice. It's perfect timing because we were just arguing about something off the air, and that happens. I said to you, Saints-Vikings. Vikings are a 10.5-point underdog, and I said, I just don't believe outside of a quarterback, another player moves the line that much. Let me give you an example. Let's say the Texans they're 2-point. What are they in the Meadowlands? 2-point favorites. J.J. Watt gets deactivated today. That might fall to a point favorite, but you're not all of a sudden going Giants by 3. You're not gonna. A player isn't gonna go out and move the line 4 or 5 points.
Yeah.
So
but,
I'm telling you, I don't think the AP deactivation changed the line. Now I don't have it in front of me, so I'm guessing at it. But it's 10.5. I bet you it was 9 at the most. Most.
I would say it was more like 7.5. The thing is, a lot of it is on public perception too, right? And so that line is what it is. And then AP gets deactivated. Well, everyone and their dog runs out and bets New Orleans. So of course that line is going to grow.
We'll ask Randall the Handle. He joins us now, co-host of The Bottom Line, brought to you by BetTheGreek.net. I don't know what it was before, Randall. Can a running back, Adrian Peterson's pretty good, but can he move the line multiple points by all of a sudden being out in the middle of a week?
I think both you guys are right. The public perception is a big part of it. But when I speak to my people that are involved in setting the line, they're telling me AP is worth anywhere from 1.5 to 2 points.
Okay.
But he's a premier back. I mean, usually it's only quarterbacks that will move the line significantly. If J.J. Watt was out, yes, there would be a reaction on the line, but certainly nowhere near a starting quarterback who obviously is an essential part of a team's offense. And those are the guys, you know, Peyton Manning is worth 3 points.
Oh, yeah.
Could be 5 points. It's not like a running back. Running backs are somewhat interchangeable, as we know.
Yeah, if you find out Jay Cutler's out this week for the Bears, they're 2.5-point underdogs at night in against the Jets right now. That line goes to 5 or 6 because you don't know who the Bears are tossing in a quarterback. Exactly.
Jimmy Clausen, it would be.
That's right. So, okay, it goes to 7.5.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's what would happen. The number tonight, is it intriguing? Atlanta has looked far from dominant, obviously, and struggled in Cincinnati. Matt Ryan struggled outside in good weather and bad weather, but they get the Bucs right where they want them tonight. 6.5-point favorites on most cards.
Yeah, that number's been dropping a little bit. Tampa Bay money has been showing up, oddly enough, because here's an 0-2 team after playing 2 home games, and they go to play Atlanta, who's given up a lot of yards. In fact, it's only 2 games, but they've given up the most amount of yards in the NFL, and that's always a concern. But in fairness to them, they've played the Saints and the Bengals, 2 teams that are, you know, more than capable of racking up yardage. So it's an interesting matchup. Of course, it's a divisional matchup. Atlanta, very good home team, but their inability to pass rush is a big concern. Atlanta's the only team in the NFL without a sack this year. That's a big deal when you're laying those kinds of points. I lean to Tampa here simply because of the weak pass rush, of the yards that Atlanta is giving up. I don't like giving away points with a team in that situation.
The Buffalo Bills looking to move to 3-0, and they are a point favorite at home against the San Diego Chargers. You wonder how much differently this line would have looked a week ago, because San Diego right now, the darling after they knock off the Seattle Seahawks.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Buffalo last week was around a pick. It kind of went back and forth with Miami, and they were 1, and then the other team was 1, and it kept going back and forth. Well, now Buffalo's getting some respect. They're playing a San Diego team who certainly ranks with Miami, and now they're a 2.5-point choice, this based on results. And this is still with San Diego knocking off Seattle. So I think the line kind of tells you something, that the odds makers are believing in the Bills. The Bills had good players. The question, as we all know, was going to be a quarterback. And with that running assembly that they have, they can control the pace of a game. They can keep Manuel from having to win the game on his own. And you know, Buffalo's a pretty good football team. You look at their roster. They got stars on that team. I would not underestimate them. If they went to 3-0, it wouldn't surprise me here. San Diego coming, you know, this could be a letdown spot. After you knock off the Super Bowl champs, then you got to fly all the way to the Eastern time zone. That's a pretty big challenge they have in front of them.
Randall the Handle Coast, the bottom line with Jory Mittelstadt, of course, brought to you by BetTheGreek.net. That starts 10 o'clock on Sunday. The one line I want to finish with is one. I may not say this the rest of the year. I'm shocked that it's this low for a home favorite. Carolina is a 3-point favorite over Pittsburgh. Now, the Steelers have extra rest, but their offense looked abysmal in Baltimore. With all that stuff swirling around the Ravens last week, Pittsburgh can't get it into the end zone, and they had a bad second half against Cleveland the week before. I'm shocked that it's this low for Carolina, but that's the money often goes to the Steelers, the Cowboys, the 49ers, those traditional favorites of fans, I guess.
Well, yeah, Pittsburgh is definitely a public team, and that is somewhat of a factor into the line. I mean, the odds makers know who the public teams are, and they shade it a little bit. Carolina's been disrespected all year. I mean, they were a 4-point underdog to Tampa Bay in week 1. If that game were to be played today, it was at Tampa, Carolina would likely be a field goal. For some reason, I talked about this a lot before the season started. I couldn't understand why this team was being disrespected so much. People were calling for this huge drop-off. They were 40-1 to win the Super Bowl. This team has an outstanding defense. Having said that, you're right. Three and a half does seem awfully cheap, but this is the NFL. You never really get what you see or see what you get. And Carolina has a bit of a pop gun offense at the moment, and maybe that's the concern, because Pittsburgh has a lot of playmakers on the field. They haven't looked to be in sync, but Carolina, known for defense, their home games are low scoring, so they don't want to put up a real big number because of the low scoring there. That one's an interesting one to me. I haven't really figured out where I'm leaning in that one yet, but it is a bit of a curious line. I can't disagree.
And real quickly, we got about 30 seconds here, but it's the Super Bowl rematch, Denver at Seattle. Seattle is laying 5. What's the right side here?
I would be on. I'll be on Seattle. I think that Seattle. It 43-8 was a bit of a fluky game, but still, that's a lot of ground for Denver to make up. And Denver hasn't looked so good. They almost blew a 24-point lead to the Broncos. They had to make a goal line stand last week to hold off the Chiefs. Seattle's defense just too powerful. It helps that the Seattle lost that game last week. They're 18-1 at home with Russell Wilson. Since he's been the starter there, I just think Seattle's too much for Denver, and Denver hasn't looked all that great despite their 2-0 start.
Thanks, Randall. Good stuff.
Have a great weekend, guys.
Randall Handel, co-host The Bottom Line, brought to you by BetTheGreek.net. That goes Sunday morning at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So, we talked a little bit yesterday about Ryan Johansson. Strong words from Jarmo Kekäläinen as to his agent, Kurt Overhart. Strong words from John Davidson. Now, JD, Jackets president, was on Primetime Sports last night.
If they as a group want to sit out, it's not our fault. We don't think. It's not our fault at all. We've offered great offers. And what we're getting back are nonsensical in our minds.
The Jackets have made this decision to really throw the gauntlet down when it comes to their young star player. Ryan Johansson has packed his bags and gone back home to Vancouver to wait this out.
I know we in this business get accused of overreacting sometimes. And then sometimes we make fun of the people who overreact. We've had, Overreaction Monday in the NFL the last 2 weeks. But I don't recall you doing it, and I know I didn't do it. The whole Montreal thing. In the last 6-8 months, everyone's like, Bergevin's screwing this up. I'm reading columns, and I'm going, no, he's staying quiet, and they'll get their player. Subban's being greedy. He's going to sit out. Doesn't care about the Canadians. No, he waited it out. Now, they almost did go to an arbitration, but they got the deal done, and they did it privately. I hear John Davidson yesterday say the most inexplicable thing, and he says, well, I have no problem putting, now to reset this, he threw a bunch of offers out there and he said, well, we've offered him this over 2 years. We've offered him this over 5 and he could make 46 over 8. So he's basically laying it all out there, which is something that teams just don't generally do anyway. And then he says, I have no problem putting those numbers out there. After all, when a player gets a contract, it becomes public. Yes, because you've mutually agreed on it, right? You don't want Sidney Crosby is not going to come out and say, hey, I just want everybody to know I'm asking for $12 million a year in the next contract negotiation with Pittsburgh. I'm going to keep you posted on that. This is dirty pool. And it's like this insecurity thing in Columbus where, oh, we don't want our fans to think we're cheaping out because they've been accused of that potentially before. Andrew, John Davidson, how would he like it if NBC released what he asked for in negotiations when he was a broadcaster? Would that be fair to John Davidson? They're the employer. He's the employee. He's got this all wrong. And GMs and other players, if you're Ryan Murray and you're Ryan Murray's agent, you'll come to a deal with him in 2 years, you're watching this pretty carefully, aren't you?
Okay, and what are you going to do? What are you going to do if you're Ryan? I don't have as big a problem with this at all. And yeah, is it low-hanging fruit? It is, because fans in Columbus, like every fan in every market, is never going to side with the player who's asking for millions and millions of dollars. It's never going to happen because we don't identify.
I don't know about that, guys. People love their athletes, man.
Some GMs are very, very passionate about this bridge deal, and they want a Matt Duchene bridge, and that is fair. And the one thing I like what they said, and JD said it last night as well on Primetime Sports, and have they gone a little far? Maybe. And I think it has more to do about Kurt Overhart than it does Ryan Johansson.
Maybe so, but...
But the one thing I like what they've said, and the Montreal Canadiens never said this about PK Subban, it's if in 2 years you take this bridge deal and you blow it out of the water, yeah, we'll gladly pay you. We'll give you all the money in the world. And I think, yeah, that's fair, right? They're not going to try to cheap out on
anyone
2 years
can say
from
that,
now.
But anyone can say that. Andrew, get some ratings, and in a few years we'll pay you. Are you diving right in on that, or do you want some money now? Like, Ryan Johansson's not going to be starving, but I disagree with you. Do you think Boston Bruins fans are, hey, I hope Jeremy Jacobs wins against Milan Lucic in their contract stalemate. Fans don't say that.
Don't forget, coming up at 8:42, Dan Biles, my Stanley Cup winning head coach, out of work. He's going to break his silence with us here on Brady and Walker. When we come back at 8:02, a Leafs camp begins, and already shots thrown at Steve Spott and Phil Kessel. What to make of it? We'll tell you.